from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening. We have a busy night ahead of us tonight. We're going to check in with Aruba a little later on this evening with Jossie Manser, the managing editor of Diario. And if Hurricane Ike hasn't blown away, Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch will be talking to him. But we're going to start out with three guests that are near and dear to my heart and very close to this program, who have started a new service, a new organization, a new show, call it whatever you like, called Justice Interrupted. We've talked about justice many, many times on this program and how I think justice can be served many different ways. And when you get a case where justice is interrupted, Stacy Dietrich, who is an award-winning 15-year law enforcement officer, author, and media consultant, a former detective specializing in sex crimes, Susan Murphy Milano is a respected author, nationally recognized relationship safety expert, and Robin Sachs is a LA County deputy district attorney and author, will come to your aid. And I think it's just an absolutely fantastic idea, and I thought I'd bring them on for a good portion of the program tonight to talk about that. Good evening, ladies.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Now, Justice Interrupted says it all, I think, Susan. When you come to that type of story, and we're going to talk a little bit about Kaylee Anthony and Natalie Holloway and Lily Umbrero and all sorts of different stories that I'm sure that you guys are working on and covering, Justice Interrupted pretty much hits the nail on the head right now because there hasn't been justice in those cases.
That's right. A lot of the cases that we see, I mean, that's why Stacy, Robin, and I decided to come together, because we were just overwhelmed with people's stories and information that were not getting investigated, and just information as simple as maybe perhaps a telephone number or doing a blog. I think Stacy and Robin would agree.
Now, Stacy, longtime police officer, author, you know, when you look at cases like this, call them cold cases, call them whatever you want, you and I know and the other gals know that there's going to be no end to these types of stories. How are the three of you going to work on these stories, and how do you choose which one? Because it must be difficult.
Okay, Susan, factor in that some of those work on. I know I've received ones that involve custody cases that are divorces. We don't do that. We focus on the cases that where truly their justice has not been served. There's been a glitch in the system. The cases run cold. Media has not focused on this enough, which was sorely needed to, I guess, light the fire under the justice system. Those are the cases that we're talking about here.
Robin Sachs, ADA from Los Angeles County. When you come across cases like this, even if you're doing a show or a blog or whatever, there may be some legalese that people have to respect and you guys have to respect. Or what sort of format are you going to be following when you, I'm going to use the term investigate these cases where justice has been interrupted?
Well, the idea is that so many, countless people suffer in the hands of the justice system all the time and get re-victimized, frankly, by law enforcement, by prosecutors, by judges, by defense attorneys, and any probation officers, you name it. And so the idea is that we are going to at least track to make sure that everyone is doing their jobs at every angle, not necessarily having a format in terms of an investigation, but at least assisting in making sure that the people and the parties who are involved in the investigation know the protocols, and that we can connect the loopholes so that each case is treated as it should in each jurisdiction. We're not going to dictate how an investigation should run, but we can certainly provide clues and resources in terms of how to get it done, and raise the awareness and publicity if that's what it takes in order to light a fire, as Stacy says, that they're people's behind.
You know, and I think you hit the nail on the head when it comes to awareness, Susan Murphy Milano. People need to know about this, and the small amount of time that the three of you have been working on it already, I understand that you're inundated already with cases, but selling this more and advertising it more and doing more PR with it will only make you busier. What are you looking for as far as getting the word out?
We're looking for people to listen. We're looking for people to send, you know, we have a post office box. We have communication with the blogs and the internet and our own addresses. It's word of mouth, and they can help us too in their cities by posting and putting up information at the churches, at the schools, if the person is from their community who has gone missing. I also want to point out an important piece of this, of Justice Interrupted, is that we're also going to be doing things with domestic violence victims. Let's hypothetically take Stacy Peterson. Let's say that prior to her disappearance or her vanishing, she had come to us. The three of us have developed tools and techniques that will be able to permanently create a record, a legal forum, if you will, through the justice system, where justice will not be interrupted once they go vanishing or missing. And I think that Robin could talk a little bit more about that.
You know, Stacy Dietrich, a longtime police officer, when someone comes to you and says, I think my husband may kill me, and if I do die, go after him, you see it in your line of work. You're going to see it in this type of venture, Justice Interrupted. That's got to weigh on the nerves a little bit. Or do you set that aside and know that here's a person we need to help?
Absolutely, and keep in mind, you know, being at the first responder level in uniform, the street level as a police officer, I may not have been able to be as pack a punch, if you will, as I can in this position and take the case of Lily Arambaro. They had hit a dead end. They were not getting much cooperation from the Miami Police Department.
Yeah.
And, you know, we worked on that. We made some phone calls. I called Miami Police Department. It tends to pack a punch. You know, we're this organization. We are authors. We have media contacts. And they freely gave me information that the family didn't have. And I was able to relay that to the family with an explanation based on my experience that, yes, they are at a dead end, and we need to come up with more to give them to continue this investigation. It's kind of like a liaison type thing, and as Susan pointed out, we're going to be doing the records, which Robin will be getting into, but in the future, we also want to put out a series of DVDs, of instructional DVDs for, like, sex crime victims, you know, students going to college, as well as books and speaking engagements. So we're looking at really having this take off.
Yeah, Robin Sachs, ADA, when you look at making these records, making these recordings, whatever you call it, how difficult is that for the person that's coming forward that is truly afraid for their lives? One person I know you're working with, I'm not going to divulge your name, has spoken to me, and I've said, yeah, that's a fantastic idea, but it's got to be difficult on the mind to come forward and say, if you find my body, it was my husband that killed me.
Well, we absolutely know how difficult that it is in coming forward, but not any more difficult than it is living day by day, having that fear being a very real fear. And if we are getting the call, or they are having that conversation, a victim is having that conversation with us, then there is definitely a reality and a concern that needs to be taken to heart. And so what we are trying to do in terms of the process of keeping these records is providing an avenue for victims to be able to feel confident that their case will at least be solved, where the truth will come out and perhaps prevent other people from becoming victims of somebody, which, as we know, the recidivism and these types of things is huge.
If you're just tuning in, Stacy Dietrich, Susan Murphy Milano, and Robin Sachs are here. We're talking about their new venture called Justice Interrupted. Let's go to Stacy and talk about a case that you guys have been working on and have covered on your program, Mansfield Police Officer Brian Evans, a tragedy, you know, and when you wear the uniform, and that's why I'm coming to you right now, and whether it's me, you, whoever, and a brother officer goes down, and when you're close like this, it's a tough story, but you've told it well, and it's a huge case of justice interrupted.
Right, and, you know, it seems continual, and now that I am in a position where I'm not on the inside and kind of face that fear of repercussions from the criminal justice system that I work in, I'm able to catapult that more into the mainstream. And, you know, in the case of Brian Evans, which was just a horrific lack of injustice, right now we have the FOP union attorneys meeting with state representatives to get the state of Ohio insanity laws changed that somewhat mirror the state of Pennsylvania. We've got people working with Trina Evans to get her message out, setting up websites, and garnering this huge following of support. So, you know, there's nothing negative here that we're doing. Nothing could be construed as negative. I think that we look at everything extremely fair. And, you know, we've been in the system long enough that we know, you know, what is fair and what is not fair. If, you know, a victim comes to us and says, you know, this is going on, and the evidence, obviously, you know, based on our experience, doesn't support that, we're clearly not going to take that. We know what is serious. We know what needs our attention. And, you know, when the three of us put our heads together, we're all over it.
And it's the experience factor that impresses me the most, Susan Murphy Milano. When you have a case like this, a tragedy like Evans or something very high profile like Natalie Holloway, and we'll get into that. We have some breaking news on that front 3 years later, believe it or not. That has to be something that's heartwarming to the three of you and whoever else is involved, where you can, you know, you can go in front of a microphone or put a camera in front of a judge's face or a politician's face and say, why? Because most people know right from wrong, including the politicians, including the people involved, and when they screw up, they should be held accountable.
I think what's interesting and unique about the three of us, Justice Interrupted, is that what we do is that we investigate first. You know, everything doesn't always appear the way it is on the surface.
Exactly.
And we each take the time to dig, to learn. Before we do that, before we react to something, because sometimes that's what people want you to do, but it's our experience. I mean, combined, we probably have 60 years together in our various law enforcement, prosecutorial, and advocacy. And we have seen things. We've all been on crime scenes. And we take a step back first. We look at the situation, and then we assess it. But I don't think that you're going to find three more skilled individuals who have such a unique, diverse talent to rely on the other one and to come together and say, does this make sense in this case? Does this make sense in this case? I'll give you an example. Rosa Laskowski, who we talked about on your show,
yep,
and a couple of the other shows, last Friday, her husband Henry was arrested for the murder of Rosa, who disappeared on March 24th, 2008, while she took the child to school. And people had asked to write blogs. People had asked to get to media. We did that. We brought the attention out there. Some phone calls were made to the various agencies, because sometimes people aren't up on certain things regarding domestic violence,
yep,
crimes like Robin, Stacy, and I are. There's certain things in those crimes that maybe a homicide detective isn't looking at or isn't looking for. So when they sent the files to us, the family, and we reviewed them and went through them, a phone call was made, and just sort of giving them a heads up. Then things started to roll. We didn't have to put pressure on anything. Those San Diego detectives really worked at it. Teams of three every day for the last 4 or 5 months. Then all of a sudden, the break in the case. And that's what it takes sometimes. We don't have to get that involved. We just have to perhaps talk to the law enforcement entity and just say, do you know about this? We don't release that information. We're very careful about that, because we don't want to compromise a case. And again, I think that that's successful arrest. That's what we want to see. We want to see the case have closure for the families.
And that's so important, Robin Sachs. You know, when you hear the term justice interrupted and the people that are out there saying, you know, we hear about this. Gee, I wonder if those gals can help us. All they have to do is come to you with their story. And I'm sure, you know, you sit down, you analyze it, and you do what you can. Because there's, you know, this is a format that you guys have started, you gals have started, that isn't out there right now. Yeah, we have some cable news coverage, and they look at this story, and they look at that story. But getting down to the meat and potatoes of it, for lack of a better term, is another thing, and that's what makes this whole prospect of your enterprise so exciting, because it's not being done, and you guys are going to be very good at doing it, I'm sure.
Well, when I describe it, I like to describe it as Charlie's Angels meets Ghostbusters, because what you have basically is and so you have the best of both in terms of a visual, but also we are the modern day one-stop shop for justice. Here we have the nice thing about not only the number three and having three of us is that there's always one person. We specifically have an odd number so that way we can make sure we have an ability to vote any idea out if we needed to. It happened today in terms of a decision we made where Stacy and I were at odds, and then Susan came in to help us determine what the right thing to do was. And also, coming from our different perspectives, we can take our own individual backgrounds, training, experience, professional experience, education, authorship, research, and take that and put those hats on with the common goal and mission to provide justice and make sure that we're going to do it from a legal point of view, from an investigative sound point of view, and to do it making sure that we're going to advocate for the victims in the best way possible. So you just can't, you get the best of the best in all areas. And I think that, you know, you say in one way that people out there may say, wow, there's this justice interrupted that can help solve things. I also think what another benefit is that there's also could be this force of, oh my God, there's justice interrupted out there watching things.
Yep.
And that, having that watchdog and not just being privatized entrepreneurs, but the real deal folks behind it like us, are going to make the people who are out there force them to do a better job in their investigation.
Stacy, when you look at these sorts of investigations, and you've investigated, and someone comes to you with their side, you know as well as I do that there's 15 sides to an investigation. With the three of you, with choosing cases, with your own lives, how much time are you going to be able to spend on an individual case? I'm sure that as this grows, you'll be able to expand and do more, but time and working on a particular case is going to be so important.
Well, I think our long-term goal, and you know, we are applying for several grants from foundations to where we are able to take several pro bono cases per year. You know, obviously, you know, not everybody can afford to do all this type of thing, but you know, long-term down the road, we hope to bring on, you know, several field investigators, part-time investigators that can assist us, you know, as far as going out there and getting the job done appropriately. I mean, you know, we all are under book contracts, and we're all members of Women in Crime, Inc. So we do have, and we all have families. So, you know, our long-term goal is to expand this. You know, we're officially an LLC now, so we were pretty excited about that today. It came in the mail. And, you know, once we see this really grow and blossom, I think it's just going to be this really amazing thing.
We've got the gals from Justice Interrupted here, Stacy Dietrich, Susan Murphy-Milano, and Robin Sachs. We're going to take a break. We'll be back in about 3.5 minutes. And we're actually going to get into some of the cases that are out there in the media right now and talk to the girls from Justice Interrupted to see how they would cover them. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Alrighty, we are back with the gals from Justice Interrupted, Stacy Dietrich, Susan Murphy-Milano, and Robin Sachs. And what I thought we would do now is spend a little time. We've talked about Justice Interrupted and what they're going to be doing. and how they're going to be working with these sorts of cases. But I thought we'd bring the gals on and talk about some of the cases that are out there right now. One of the biggest high-profile cases, some cable networks are covering it, you know, nonstop. In fact, it's got a bit silly now that they're talking about million-dollar book deals and movies, and we still have this poor little baby that's out there, and we don't know where she is. It's the Kaylee Anthony case, and I thought I'd start with Susan Murphy Milano and get her thoughts. Obviously, this is a big case where justice does need to be served. We have mom who's, I think the charges are up to 10 or 11 charges right now, child neglect, lying to police, and a whole bunch of property check charges and fraud and all that. But we're hearing more about book deals and high-profile attorneys that are making deals with the media and not so much about what's being done to find this little girl. Your thoughts?
I think that shows how people have taken their priorities of a human life, of a child, of a helpless child, moved it out of the way for their own gain.
Yep.
I saw the other night on Nancy Grace, and she had the grandparent, Cindy and George's lawyer, on with him on her on the show, and she said, "I need to know, what are you doing? What is going on with this? Every day there's a decomposition with the child. What are you doing?" And he kept talking about, very like in layman terms, you know, we've had sightings of Kaylee, so we're checking out that.
Mm-hmm.
And he was fueling a fire when Nancy Grace was looking for specific answers. The country has not received specific answers, and I don't understand how a mother, any mother in this country, can continue the charade and at least not have the decency to tell someone where that child is so it can be properly buried.
Yep. A true case of justice interrupted, Stacey. I've spoken to the grandmother, grandfather, the bounty hunter, everyone, almost everyone involved in this case, and I know the cop instinct in me. I would love to sit in an interview room with Kaylee Anthony and have a little, excuse the pun, come to Jesus meeting with her about where her daughter is, because this is enough. It's nuts.
I agree, and I've always said that, oh my God, get me in a room with her for 15 minutes. You know, the thing here is I think at this point we need to completely disregard, you know, the grandparents and Jose Baez and everything else and start looking at the evidence. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that that's what law enforcement is doing, if they're building their case with the lab results, with the inconsistencies, with the missing child. Now with the chloroform and the fact that she had been researching it prior, I think they're now establishing some type of culpability or some type of planning, you know, which adds to a murder charge. And I think that it dissuades the accidental death theory. So I think with all of these, that they're slowly building their case, and I don't want to see them hurry along and jump on this where all of their ducks are not in a row and, you know, she's found not guilty or there's a glitch. So I'm glad to see that they are taking the time and building this case together. I think once it comes out, you will definitely see an indictment for murder. And, you know, as we have spoken with on some other shows with Ted Tobias, who's an expert in no-body cases, that once gets going, that there will be no question of a guilty verdict on Kaylee Anthony.
Robin Sachs, ADA from Los Angeles County. From the justice interrupted perspective, you look at a high-profile, super high-profile case like this, grandma, mom, grandpa, all that, but there's other family that we don't hear about. I've actually spoken to other family in this case, and they're just devastated. They don't want to come forward because of, you know, the high-profile case nature of it, but all of a sudden you get case X and a high-profile case like this, and then all of a sudden an uncle comes forward and comes to your organization and says, help us, this isn't going the way it should. You guys all of a sudden are head-to-head with the networks, with the fancy muckety-muck lawyers, but the focus is on this little girl in this case or whatever you're working on in that case. How do you handle it?
Well, what you do is the key is to keep your eye on the ball and to know exactly what we're doing and what we're dealing with. And in this case, we are focusing on
I would think that there is a focus on, there's two aspects. One is a search. What the exact search is going to veil is, you know, in my opinion, is going to be a murder charge. In addition, I think that that provides a certain amount of comfort for the American population, American society, that, you know, when you charge someone with something like murder, and I agree exactly with what Stacey says, is that there's no reason to rush. Here you have a crime for which there is no statute of limitations. We have a case that's building and an investigation that's ensuing, and you want to have the no stone unturned approach, one for the consumption of the American society in terms of the investigation of the crime, but also for the dignity of this child and the respect for her her little life that she did have, that she was important enough to look for. So that's one aspect of the search. And then the next part is what you do in terms of justice. Here, this is a case that's going to represent how cases, criminals, and victims are going to be treated throughout the whole country. And the part about the media and the part about the circus element of it, there is an element of media interest, and the media interest, you know, you hear all of these comments that why don't we go on to all the other cases that are out there, but what we really need to be focusing on is why is this a case of media interest?
Right.
And why is there a focus on this, and why isn't the camera on Drew Peterson right now, and, you know, the Natalie Holloway case and some of the other cases of the past? And it's because there is a lot of differences about this case that are certainly having a lot of people scratch their heads and bear some mention. One is, here you have a family where there's a member of law enforcement that is within the immediate family, the grandfather, who has stayed quiet in the background, where you have not seen very much, heard very much, and really a whole bunch of dots that have been left unconnected in terms of, you know, what does he know, what has he thought, what is his natural investigative instincts tell him, what experiences has he had with her, and why isn't he pushing for some cooperation? Why isn't he putting some pressure on the family? Why isn't he putting pressure on his wife? So that's one curious element. And the other curious element is, this is a mom, and Susan pointed it out, but this is a mother, this is a woman, this is a young girl who, it frankly, is not the normal profile of a criminal murderer and that's out there. And I know you've had Larry Morris on, we've had him on Justice Interrupted, but there are dangerous women out there. And there are dangerous women who are unconnected and are willing, able, capable, and sick that need to be highlighted just as much as men do. So I think that for those reasons, you need to focus on those issues instead of the sensationalism.
Susan Murphy Milano, why do we see that when it comes to cases like this? Cases with the school teacher, the pretty blonde school teacher, that sort of stuff, where the media and the public seem to have a different perspective when it comes to females and crime, like Robin just said, and like the good doctor Larry Morris has said, there are plenty of dangerous women out there, and that's something that we don't see or hear a lot of because of the, I don't know, is it the cell factor on TV or the radio or the internet, or just what is it?
I think it's our appearances. I think it's how we present ourselves. I think it is how we look. And if we look at the case Justice Interrupted is investigating right now, the vanishing or missing person, Michael Tapley, who vanished from Snowflake, Arizona. We had a sister on just this past Tuesday. And there are so many elements in this case that put up red flags of when they initially disappeared, both the wife or the estranged wife and Michael Tapley were missing for a couple of weeks, like 14, 15 days. And then she shows up back in town by herself and goes to the police station and says, you know, I understand you're looking for me. Here's a petite, pretty, 5'3", 115-pound, middle-aged woman who is very attractive, who the police are not, or the sheriff there in Navajo County, are not looking at the facts, the information on the case to connect the dots, as Robin said earlier, in the case. And it is because it is a woman. It is because she came in possibly with an alleged story that they believed And yet, all the information that Justice Interrupted has gathered in the last 3 weeks, it doesn't add up. And it doesn't take brain surgery to look at these cases, and that's what we're doing. We are providing the avenue for the Tapley family to knock on every door possible in the state of Arizona. If we have to go to the U.S. Attorney's Office, that's what we're going to do. And we're going to get justice for Michael Tapley, because a man who had a dog for 10 years, and the dog is still alive, he never left any place without this dog. He never left any place without certain other articles. The wife was not allowed, per the insurance document that I have, to drive the vehicle. There's a lot of strange facts in this case that, again, if we connect the dots, this woman is a potential suspect in a possible homicide, and that's what we're working on. And it's been very difficult to deal with law enforcement to get them to see that, and I think that's the people's perception around the country.
Stacey Dietrich, the missing person that turns into the homicide case or the potential homicide case, and you have the family that comes forward, whether it's the case that you're just talking about, Susan was just talking about, or Natalie Holloway or whoever, that you hope and you hold out as much hope as you can that your missing loved one will be found, but the evidence starts to point something more sinister. When does missing become murder?
Well, I think you need to look at all the initial things put on the table right in front of you right at the time. And like Susan said, when it comes to women as suspects, I think that it's so foreign. It's such a foreign entity to a prudent person to conceive of this 5'3" petite young woman as this maniacal murderer. And one of the things is working side by side with other officers for years, and you know this, Dana, you know, we go to a domestic and you know, a 6 foot tall husband says, you know, she just swung a chair at me.
Mm-hmm.
And this woman sitting there, you know, a pretty young, small girl, and you're thinking, come on, buddy, you know, I've been guilty of it before. I see everybody guilty of it. It's very difficult for us to absorb that something like that would actually take place. And as far as missing goes, you know, way from A all the way to Z. I mean, is this common for this person to be gone? Are there mental problems? Is there a history of suicidal behavior? Is there extramarital affairs? You know, in the case of Michael Tapley, one of the things that raised a huge red flag was the two prior relationships that Gina Tapley was involved in. Two different males that didn't know each other had filed restraining orders against her and cited violent and irrational behavior, almost word for word, on these temporary protection orders, which at that point you're building this pattern of behavior with this woman. And, you know, the inconsistencies of his whereabouts, and as Susan pointed out, the dog, testimony from the family, we've got statements from ex-employers of Gina's that's made statements. I mean, again, you're putting together this whole case, and although it might be circumstantial, you know, it points us in the right direction, and it should be pointing law enforcement in the right direction. And you need that. We had a case here of a woman that was missing. She was kind of a vagrant, no one that anybody paid much attention to, but there was that one officer that kept on that case and kept on it and kept on it until he finally got a witness facing criminal charges to break. And, you know, to make a long story short, we dug her out of the backyard 3 years later. And, you know, had it not been for that particular officer who kept an interest, that case would have run cold. I'm confident she would have never have been found. And unfortunately, there are thousands of cases like that out there in this country.
Absolutely. We're calling this Justice Interrupted. It's real life, ladies and gentlemen. And these three gals, Stacey Dietrich, Susan Murphy-Milano, and Robin Sachs, are Charlie's Angels when it comes to helping justice when it has been interrupted. Susan Murphy-Milano, your whole what am I looking at here? The whole format of what you're doing is something that we don't see or hear or read about, at least not that I know of. And I cover the media pretty well, right from stem to stern. This is a new thing. This should be an exciting thing. People should be all over this, not only the people that need help, but those that want to help promote it. What are you looking for? And what are you looking at expanding to?
Well, I think that it is unique, and it we do need people's assistance. We need people's cooperation. Tips and information that's provided to all of us is kept confidential. You know, when we ask for documents or when we need assistance, we expect everybody's cooperation, because that's going to be the success for closure on these cases. What we're looking for is honesty in the information that's presented, because sometimes people provide information that's not accurate. We're looking for information to be filled out that we're going to be putting on our website, which will be put together very shortly, called justiceinterrupted.com, where you're going to be able to fill out the forms, put the information there, and then we'll be able to assess the case and the situation. But it's about the facts. We need facts. We need assistance with, you know, maybe we have to go to a town and we're not familiar with the area. It would be nice to sort of have someone from a local church assist us with certain facts or certain areas. There's a case where we have a connection. You and I spoke about it. I sent you an email out of this. It's a case that you had on your show a year ago.
Yep.
I received an anonymous tip in an area that no one could have known about but this woman. And she was very specific. And she said, this is the only place that they didn't look. And this is why they didn't look there at the time. But I think that so-and-so is buried there.
Mm-hmm.
Any kind of information that you don't think means much, you saw somebody, you know, drive by and you recognized them and you thought it was odd that they went down that street. Anything in a clue in these cases is very important. And getting the word out. I mean, this is not, we work at this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, in between families, in between other jobs. And this is something that I did for a number of years under an agency across the country called Project Protect, where we did this hands-on with police across the country, and it's gaining the momentum with the prosecutors across the country, the state's attorneys, the district attorneys, the sheriff's office, the U.S. attorney's office, the attorney general's office, so that when we do walk in, people do know that we are there not adversarially, but we are there to assist them to close the case, because they have so many cases, and they are overwhelmed and overburdened. And we provide a tremendous service because of our track record in doing these already. We just thought that this was a wonderful way to just get out there and do it and really help people in a way that they haven't been helped before.
Robin Sachs, the national exposure, international exposure that will come to this organization, Justice Interrupted, that needs to come to this organization, Justice Interrupted, can easily be done through a television network, a radio network, a satellite network, you name it, whatever you call it. In the studio, talking like we are, in behind a microphone and in front of a computer monitor is one thing, but you talked earlier about boots on the street, getting an investigator to come out and work for you, to do live shots from a scene, talking to a witness in a home, going and speaking at a family vigil or covering a family vigil. The McAvoy case comes to mind. It's coming up for trial here on September 22nd. That's going to be so important. Have you had interest from those in the media to say, hey, you guys got something here, we'd like to help you with it?
Well, we have actually received quite a bit of interest, not only independently, Susan, Stacy, and myself, but what people really like and what the media, what I've found that the media really likes about us, and we do get calls, and we're in the process of negotiating different, you know, ideas, and ideally we'd like to have a one-stop shop, if you will, in the media department as well, instead of piecemeal, where we do radio in one hand and TV in another hand and then have to independently hit all the circuits. Just as we work better as a collective whole, as Justice Interrupted, we feel that from a media perspective, would work better if we were able to combine our energies to one TV and media, TV, radio, and print, you know, collection, at least to farm us out from one entity so that we feel comfortable that we're in the right media hands who aren't just trying to profit off of our sensationalism and our good looks, but to really be out there and do the right thing. And the key is, and what makes us different and what makes the media people really like us, is that we have the recognized authority because we are professionals that have the experience in the field. We are not vigilante advocates just on our own. I mean, we may have our own advocacy and outspokenness to our personalities, but it comes with the street cred, frankly, of having been out there in the fields and having done the stuff ourselves. I know what it's like as a prosecutor when, you know, a member of some nonprofit organization just comes in and voices their opinion, versus having someone who's actually been in the trenches like myself and come in and say, listen, I know what you're dealing with. I know what this case is about. Let me help you. And we have the ear to the court system, to the DAs, to the law enforcement, based on our own experiences. And we want to make sure that we have the right ears as the media before we sell out to just any television or radio show.
Absolutely. And the exposure, because when you're on radio or when you're on TV, Stacey, and people see you and say, I wonder if they could help us, that's so important. You, longtime police officer, it's always in your blood. You could be a cop for 25 years and then be a Walmart greeter, but I can guarantee you, when you're that Walmart greeter, if somebody snatches a purse, you're going to go after that guy that just snatched that purse, because we get that in our blood. And I think with Justice Interrupted, you, from the police perspective, will be wanting to really get down and get in the mud, so to speak, and get that case solved or get that justice for the people that don't have it.
Absolutely. And that's where what Robin was touching on. I mean, each one of us individually have, you know, all of us do media commentary. We've been on the three of us, everywhere from Oprah to Larry King to Nancy Grace to Geraldo, putting all three of us together on one show packs that punch. Just it rises that to a whole new level, so that when we, you know, come forward and say, what are you doing about this case, the name Justice Interrupted is like, oh wow, that's you guys, let me see what I can do. It makes people more accommodating. The most important aspect of the whole thing is it will help us aid victims even that much more. Kind of like Susan touched on this once, you know, Meet the Press, where we can bring a rogue judge on our show and put him in the hot seat and say, why did you do this? And bring a victim on and say, tell us your story. No one's heard this. What can we do to help? What can the country that's out there listening right now, whether it be radio or television, what can they do to help you? You know, getting their story out with one media outlet or one radio outlet, that is, you know, we are keeping our fingers crossed. And as Robin said, we're getting quite a bit of interest on that. But again, we want to make sure that it's going to be the right fit, the one that's going to benefit the victims the most.
Yep. And street cred is so important, Susan. And we're going to finish off with you and the talk about Justice Interrupted. You guys have proven time and time again that you're legit. You've got the street cred. Those in media organizations, PR firms, whatever, that are listening to this show or others or have their eye on you will know that this is a hell of an idea. This is something that isn't out there right now. This is something that could work and can expand. And the bottom line, Susan Murphy Milano, help people. And isn't that what it's all about?
It is. Like our own DNA, because no two persons have the same DNA, we are a unique DNA, the three of us. And, you know, people often forget that I got involved with this because my own mother was murdered. And I understand that process, and I have been able to deal with victims in a very different way, and law enforcement, and the prosecution. And sometimes that's what it takes, just like when John Walsh does his show, because he's been there, so he's able to aid and gather the information to bring these cases together. And Justice Interrupted is able to take each case and look at it separately and distinctly as a DNA, and then put the facts with the person, with the case, and move forward. And sometimes we're not always going to be able to do it, and we'll let you know when that happens. But you're not going to find a group of individuals, an agency, if you will, that is going to go out there and be the voice and be the closure for these victims across the country. And because it's got to be done. It's time for this. It's time for us or an entity to be a smoking gun, and that's what Justice Interrupted is. It is a smoking gun, so that when somebody goes missing and something happens, and perhaps we've been able to do this, secure the paperwork prior to that happening and get a video, we're going to be able to release it. We're going to be able to work with the prosecutors. We're going to be able to work with the police. And it's the trust. It's the public trust in what we do and the honesty and integrity and professionalism that we bring to Justice Interrupted that I believe will make us that much more of a success in solving these cases across the country.
Well, it's a hell of an idea, and I love it. I'm supporting you guys 1,000%. Thank you, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, we'll talk soon. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay, that's Stacey Dietrich, Susan Murphy Milano, and Robin Sachs from Justice Interrupted, and stay tuned for more from them. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys. We'll be right back.
It's the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're back. You've all read the news reports, especially on Scared Monkeys and other places, of a new witness that has come forward in the disappearance of Alabama teenager Natalie Holloway that has told his story about seeing something on the morning of May 30th, 2005, and I thought I'd go to my best source in Aruba, the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Manser, to talk about that. Hi, Jossie. Welcome back.
Well, thank you, man.
Nice to have you back on the show. It's been, you know, over 3 years. We have a new witness that's being reported. What can you tell us?
Well, this is a new witness that came forward. He has given his testimony in the past to the prosecution, but the prosecution seemed to have brushed him off. So he was taken to the U.S. He was invited to go to the U.S., where he passed two different polygraph tests with flying colors. That tells us that he's not lying, that he's telling the truth. Apparently, he stated that on May the 30th, 2005, he was asleep at his residence when he was awakened by the frantic barking of some neighboring dogs. He looked at the clock beside him, and it was 4 a.m. He thought that someone was standing outside of his house. He went to a large window, and when he looked out, he saw a man, a young male, white male, walking hurriedly towards the right in the direction of the Aruban hotels. Then he stated that he got a good look at the white male who was walking under a street lamp, wearing only one shoe.
Mm-hmm.
He also observed that the man who was coming from the direction of a pond, the Montserrat Pond, was soaking wet with muddy water, and that he was wet up to the level of his chest, with his wet clothes clinging to him. Then the witness reported he had never seen the man before, but the situation seemed extremely strange given the time of morning and his appearance. After the man passed by and walked in the direction of the hotels, he sat down in his living room for about 5 minutes. And then this is another part, very interesting, is that he observed a car driving extremely slow coming from the direction of the hotel, driven by a middle-aged white male with the same young man riding as a passenger in the front seat. And this is very important because the one question I've always had and that was never answered is, how did Joran van der Sloot get to his home that eventful night?
Right.
How? Who took him? The Kalpoe brothers denied having come back to get him, pick him up. So this man in a red Jeep is the man who picked him up by the pond and took him home. And we will have this publication on Monday, and the man that was driving the Jeep was his father. So the story becomes very interesting. The timeline seems to make sense in every detail. And since this man passed the polygraph test, I know that Mr. Moss of the prosecution doesn't believe in polygraph tests. He stated that.
Right.
But I do, and most other people do. Because it's very hard for you to lie to that machine when you're all wired up and questions are put to you, and you have to answer without any physiological reactions that will tend to indicate that you're not telling the truth. So that's about the totality of the story that this new witness is telling us. No?
The important aspect of it, not only the fact of the identification, is the fact that the person that he saw walking only had one shoe. And this is something that has been looked at for quite some time in this case. Your thoughts?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, when they drained the pond, I remember way back, and it's pretty hard to remember every detail now, but I remember that they did find the shoe. I don't know what kind of a shoe it was.
Right.
It was a tennis shoe of the sort that Joran wears, but they were all given over to the police, and we know what happens to all the evidences that are given to the authorities. I mean, they seem to disappear.
In this case, for sure. Now, this witness not being able to identify, obviously, immediately that evening, how was it to come that it became Joran Vandersloot and Paulus?
Because the next few days, remember, the story broke. All the radios had it on television. And when he looked at the picture of this man, of Joran, in all this breaking news that were happening at the same time in the following days, he recognized him.
Right.
As he recognized his father.
And the part that I find so troubling is that they've spoken to this witness earlier on, and now that he's taken some polygraph tests, even the prosecutor still isn't a big fan of polygraph. Has the prosecution made any sort of comment as far as this witness goes?
The only comments that they make is trying to discredit him for whatever reason. Not with facts, because we're not hearing any facts coming out of the prosecution, but just what we do hear coming from him is that Paulus is a very nice man, he's a very gentle man, and so that kind of cover-up, in other words, what gives us the impression of a cover-up and becomes stronger every time, is all these expressions of this man being such a gentle and nice man, of his discrediting this witness. He had this witness before. This witness did give the prosecution his testimony, but they scared him off. They discredited him.
I don't know what
game this prosecutor Moss is playing, but we're going to get to the bottom of this.
Yeah, it's a huge game for sure, and you and I both know, Jossie, a cobra looks nice until you pet it, and then it rips, then it bites you and rips your head off. One last question before I let you go, and I appreciate you coming back on, Jossie Mansour, the managing editor of Diario. Our mutual friend Tim Miller from Texas Ag Research apparently has gone to Aruba and has run into a blockade again from the prosecutor and the Aruban government as far as doing any further searches. I'm going to try and get a hold of Tim later, but unfortunately he's right in the middle of a hurricane, and I don't know if I can get him. Have you heard anything on that, Jossie?
Yeah, I met with Tim before he left. He left today for the States. I met with him yesterday, and apparently the prosecution has absolutely no interest in tending to him, in receiving him, or even listening to what he had to say. I know that Dave Holloway sent an email to the prosecution asking them to please meet with this man because he has some confidential information to give them. But even so, I mean, they just throw roadblocks in the way. They won't meet with him. They didn't meet with him.
Well, it's so unfortunate. They don't like the term cover-up, yet they're the ones that always seem to be pulling up the covers. Thank you, Jossie.
Okay.
Take care, sir.
Sure.
Bye-bye. That's Jossie Mansour, managing editor of Diario. And, yeah, I don't know. You know, Joran Vandersloot and Paulus may be nice. And again, a cobra is, too, until you get close to it. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
And now, more of the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. Here's Dana.
Okay, we're going to finish up. I was hoping to have Tim Miller from Texas EquiSearch on tonight, but Hurricane Ike is putting its wrath on Texas, and Tim is right in the middle of it. In fact, I can't even get a cell signal now to Tim. I was getting his voicemail, and now it won't even ring. It says circuits are down. So we wish Tim, his family, and everyone in Texas safety and health. when it comes to Hurricane Ike, take all the precautions that need to be given, because that storm is kicking the crap out of Texas and other places. So we hope everyone is safe and secure there. And I'm sure Tim Miller and his folks with Texas EquiSearch will be assisting with anything that needs to be done in that area, I can almost guarantee you. But it's unfortunate to see that when you run into roadblocks like Jossie Mansour was talking about, and you know the good intentions of Texas EquiSearch to go to Aruba and bring Natalie home for a proper burial, you know, and you run into these roadblocks, they wonder why that term cover-up keeps coming up. It's just sickening. Anyway, I want to thank my guests this evening, the gals from the new organization, Justice Interrupted, Stacey Dietrich, Susan Murphy Milano, and Robin Saxon, of course, from Aruba, managing editor of Diario, Jossie Mansour. My name is Dana Pretzer. You can find our webpage at www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. There you can listen to the show live. You can hear podcasts of past shows and the daily commentary, leave comments, whatever. It's always my pleasure to do a show for you. It's been 10 years plus, and I look forward to doing many, many more. We'll see you next time here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guests' websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.